Coming up on this week's episode of the FitCast, what's more beneficial, increasing your caloric deficit or increasing the amount of cardio for fat loss? And we have a roundtable about using cookie cutter programs, all coming up right now. This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by Quest Protein Bars. Quest Protein Bars are the only bars that aren't just candy disguised. 20 grams of protein, only 4 grams of non-fiber carbs, no sugar or sugar alcohols used, no junk food of any kind, and they're delicious. You can get 2 free bars by going to questproteinbar.com/fitcast. Welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 210. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me, first off, is Dr. Jonathan Fast. John, how you doing this week?
Ain't no party like a West Coast party.
Okay, and we also have Lee Peel from LeePeel.com. Lee, how you doing?
California.
All right, I like it when we can ever get some two-pack.
Two-pack? Did you really say two-pack?
No, I didn't. I said Tupac.
Oh, my God. He said two-pack.
Did he say two-pack? Did I miss that?
He did say two-pack. He's like... He said two-pack. He's like, I really enjoy it when we can start off with two-pack.
All right, we're re-recording that. I'm sorry.
You son of a bitch. You keep that.
No.
You keep
that. It's already stopped.
No, that's your fail.
No, because people want us to come in with a get to the point. We're trying to address some of these.
There's a level of streamline, and then there's a level of just us being boring as There's got to be an in-between.
Right.
Okay, well, I'm still recording. It never stopped.
Good.
That was funny. The intro doesn't matter as long as we move from the intro.
All right, we're moving on. First off, we need to talk about the other podcast that we're doing, mainly the FitCast Pulse, which is our weekly news show that covers the latest and greatest in fitness and nutrition news and also research. So you can check that out in the main iTunes feed, or you can get it from thefitcast.com. We are recording that at... What did we agree on? 6 p.m. on Fridays? No.
2 p.m. on Fridays.
What was it? 2?
It was 1 on Fridays.
Okay. 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Fridays. And then the FitCast blog report, which I record on Wednesdays, and that comes out in the midweek. This upcoming week, we have a bunch of guests lined up that we're going to be recording these interviews. Most likely, they're also going to be broadcast live, so I'm going to give you the times for those as well. You can listen to them at justin.tv/thefitcast, and you can also hang out with the guest, ask some of your own questions, or maybe some follow-up questions as well. So we have Martin Rooney coming up at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Tuesday. John Romanello coming up on 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Wednesday. And Brad Pilon, I'm going to be talking to him at 2 p.m. this upcoming Saturday. So we have a bunch of guests lined up for this week, and I'm also in talks with a couple other people trying to get a hold of my man Tom Venuto. So I'm hoping we can get him back on soon, because he's always got some great stuff in his blog, and he's always a very fascinating guy to talk to, and he's always a great interview. So that's what we got coming up on this week. Make sure to check out the other podcasts, because we are kind of breaking things up a little bit now to allow for the podcast to be a little bit more concise and give people what they want, a little piecemeal. So you can kind of pick and choose what you want to listen to. It just, you know, if you don't want to listen to some things, you don't have to. And I did get a question about the FitCast blog report. What is it? Basically, it's just me picking out a couple blogs from around the internet during the week, and I just go a little bit more in depth, talk about them, and then throw in the show notes where you can read the blogs yourself and, you know, give your own opinion. You can definitely give me some feedback in the comment section if you'd like. Lastly, this is something that hopefully everyone will hear relatively soon, but we're going to be removing all of the old podcasts before episode 180 from the iTunes feed and from the website starting this upcoming Friday. Okay, so you're going to have pretty much a week to download the old shows if you want to. What we're going to do instead is chop up all that old stuff, put them into nice and neat sections and packages where you can have, you know, all of our discussions on such and such a topic, or you can just have all of the interviews with none of the other stuff. So you don't have to go searching through the old podcast, because we have a lot of great stuff from the old shows, But you know, it's kind of a pain in the butt to hear us talking about stuff that happened 3 years ago, and then you know, wait until you get to the interview themselves. So after 5 years, we just want to put a nice little package together, and you'll get some more information about that down the line. But if you want to have the whole episodes themselves for right now, all you got to do is go to thefickass.com. There's, you know, an easy way. I'll make it even better. Go to thefickass.com/podcast. You can just see our whole directory of all the audio files. It's all right there. You can check it all out and download them all in one little click if you want to. If you have something like download them all, which I recommend as a nice plugin for Firefox. So check all that stuff out. If you have any questions, just email me at kevin@thefickass.com. I'll give you any help that you need to if you need help downloading the episodes, just let me know. So that's all that. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back with the mailbag, answering some of your questions from this past week. So stick around. All right, we're here for the mailbag. The first question comes from Allie. Hey, Kevin, John, and Lee. I hope you guys get a chance to talk about cardio versus diet for fat loss. I know Lee has talked about this in the past, and Tom Venuto blogged about it a while back. What are the pros and cons to conditioning less and increasing my caloric deficit? Should I cut out all the high-intensity conditioning? Thanks, Allie. So, Lee, let's toss this one over to you because, like she said, you have talked about it in the past.
I have talked about this in the past. It's a good question. It's not one that I think that a lot of people kind of take into consideration. I think most people, when they jump into fat loss training, one of the first things they do is they increase their cardio. They increase their conditioning of training in general. And I talked about this recently, but one of the things that I think that a lot of people don't necessarily take into consideration, and the question is, should they take it in consideration at all? But one of the things that people don't always take into consideration is your how your conditioning level increases when you start to do that. Therefore, you're going to, over time, burn less calories. It's a positive thing that happens. It just means that you end up getting better at what you're doing. Your conditioning gets better. So there could be an argument, for argument's sake, to put in a system that plans specific deload times or deconditioning times during a fat loss program. One of the things that I think that you really need to take away from this kind of question is more where you're at when you're starting your fat loss journey. A long time ago, I think it was on JP Fitness, I wrote a monstrous response to someone who was bringing up a question like this. And one of the things that I said, and that I still stick to, is that you should only do what you have to do when it comes to fat loss and when it comes to how long your journey is. So if you decide that all of a sudden you're maybe 10, 15, 20 pounds overweight, you've never really trained before or whatnot, and you're just now deciding to take up training and you're deciding to get yourself in shape and whatnot, do I think there's really any need to focus on doing any sort of cycling programs with your cardio and your diet and conditioning and in that kind of a sense? I think that it's probably gonna cause you more suffering from paralysis of overanalysis, truthfully. I think that by the time you could get to any sort of really long-standing conditioning or need to worry about certain things, you should kind of be done with what you need to do, or at least approaching a level of done and what you need to do. That this can get to more specifics if you're trying to get to like contest dieting down and whatnot, but I'm trying to be as general as possible for the question. So where you start out, I think, really is kind of more of the argument. The more lower in weight that it is you have to lose, the more that you don't really need to worry about those things. You can benefit greatly from throwing in different intensity conditionings. Sure, taking breaks and alternating things is always good, but I don't know how much you need to worry about your actual overall conditioning in that. If you have a longer journey, one of the things I do see is people get in such a high amount of conditioning at such a high weight. They don't take a lot of deloads or training breaks or even deconditioning breaks or diet breaks, which is also incredibly important. And what can end up happening is that, you know, they're running themselves into the ground, both from a training aspect and a dieting down aspect, and are completely used to the kind of training they're doing. and it's a little bit shooting themselves in the foot. There's a lot of argument for switching up training or decreasing the training for a period of time, doing a deconditioning phase with a refeed phase at the same time, focusing more on resistance training instead of cardio. So basically, while you're refeeding, you put any sort of excess calories as you possibly get to go to muscle gains or lean gains during that period of time. Don't do any cardio, any specific cardiovascular conditioning at all. Save it up for a couple weeks, and then you can end up moving to back into a cardio style program and kind of bounce in phases like that. I've written up stuff like that. I think that it can work very well for basically always keeping ahead of the plateau. And in any fat loss situation, that's the point. That's what you're trying to do. You're trying to stave off, injury that's not necessary, deficiency that's not necessary, plateaus that are not necessary. So I think, is what are the pros and cons to it? I don't even know if it's less pros and cons. It's just more fitting. And when is the situation fitting? I don't think that it's ever a bad thing to kind of toss, surprise your body a little bit and kind of play around with your conditioning when it has nothing to do more so with athletics. When we're not talking about athletics or anything like that, we're just talking about fat loss. So there's definitely pros to always kind of keep things switching up and whatnot. But I want to make sure to emphasize that it doesn't mean that you cannot lose fat or achieve expedited fat loss with good intensity training or cardio conditioning or whatnot. So it is a depends kind of situation, but hopefully that kind of gives a map of how you would look at it, if that made sense. That was one of those times where I was talking, I'm not sure if I made sense. Did that make sense?
No, you did a pretty good job running down all the factors for that. No, it's a good point, but I think, you know, what kind of things should people consider perhaps if they do need to get in some kind of conditioning, whether it be they're still, let's just say, for example, someone's still doing like a rec basketball league, or they play soccer on the weekends and they get some conditioning through there. What kind of factors should they, you know, consider?
So what you're saying is, what would more of the parameter or protocol be for someone who's kind of a weekend warrior slash athlete?
I apologize. Let me rephrase that. Or say if someone wants to still, you know, stay in good cardiovascular shape for competitive purposes.
Okay. See, that's where it kind of changes and becomes a little bit different. Mm-hmm. It's no longer a general question, because what you're talking about is I need to maintain performance while also losing fat. And when you're looking into something in that kind of an area, I always go, and this is, unless it's a severe kind of situation in which that you have, let's say an athlete is coming back from off season and they had a little too much fun with their off season and they've gotten to the point to where they are really have put on way too much more fat mass than they should have, then this isn't going to apply to that situation. Let's say that the athlete in question just needs to lose a very moderate amount of weight, then I would keep their conditioning in general the same, or do athletic conditioning on the basis that you would in any conditioning situation. And we'll talk about this with overtraining. You need to take breaks or deloads, or you need to alter the training in some sort of level so that the athlete doesn't hit levels where they're not progressing, whatnot. So there's always back off in that sense. But I would kind of stick to that more the same and play more with the caloric deficit and keep the caloric deficit at more of a minimum, focus on refeeds, and do a lot less worrying about what was going on in a cardiovascular conditioning sense, because they need to stay conditioned. They need to keep their heart rate low. They need to keep all those kind of things going at a good pace. And for this instance, I would not choose that to be one of those protocols that you used. I would choose more of the protocol of messing with your conditioning and times of more extended times of deconditioning, so that you can have random times of ramping up your caloric burn in levels with someone who is, say, just your average Joe Jane, or someone that had a lot more fat to lose, was trying to kind of change your life essentially and go into a new realm of lifestyle and training and whatnot. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, so, no, absolutely. Yeah.
So that's that. It, like I said, that's a completely different situation, and I would be less inclined to mess with that. I would go more of a moderate deficit and just kind of try and chisel at the fat loss as you needed to. If you were dealing with someone though that was maybe a larger overweight athlete, then you might want to play around with more high intensities, going into low intensities, and mess with the conditioning some if it was a drastic event. But then that's a whole different story too. But yeah, so that's my take on that.
Awesome. Well, Allie, feel free to follow up if you'd like, but I think that should pretty much cover all the bases. So
here we go. In reviewing,
you didn't actually write who it was from, but let me see if it's the name is here at all.
Find it, don't worry.
No, you didn't. Okay.
Go.
So the question is, in reviewing what advice she was given before working with me, a new client showed me a written up list of exercises for her legs, quote, customized for her needs by a former trainer. Too bad for this winner that I've done P90X, the jackass copy the leg portion of legs and back verbatim. This client is in a severe amount of pain and can barely activate her glutes, yet he gave this to her. Needless to say, I was upset, both that the trainer obviously copied a program rather than designing one based on her needs, and that he gave her a program far too advanced for her. The experience caused me to ask the question, at what point are the programs of respected professionals, Tony Horton not included, that's their words, not ours, plagiarism instead of inspiration? Do you feel that there is anything wrong about using plans you have read in books if you know that they are appropriate for the needs and limitations of the clients? Part of me feels that we owe it to our clients to write programs from scratch, while the other part of me feels that the client is paying for the supervision and assurance of proper form. Finally, do you feel it's wise for new trainers to follow the plans of respected professionals, gaining experience in client supervision, until they feel confident enough to write their own plans? Thanks for discussing this. I think it'd be great roundtable. Love you all, and I don't know who wrote that.
It was question. Krista.
Very close.
Okay, Krista.
So, Krista?
Yes. I can't pronounce her last name, so I'm not
Going to try.
Krista R.
Oh, that was Krista's Rompolsky?
Yeah.
Yes.
There you go, John.
Oh. Yep.
Good. Well, John, I know that you read it, but what are your thoughts?
I love that question, and I think it's a really good one. I think what you're basically talking about in a question like this, there's two parts of it. One, do we think that a cookie cutter type of routine is appropriate to use for anyone, really? And then how much of that cookie cutter routine would be, you know, beyond, again, like that kind of client trainer agreement, where the client believes that they're being treated as an individual. So on the one hand, I think taking cookie cutter, I don't think that there's any problem in using a cookie cutter routine in and of itself. I'm not talking about necessarily as a personal trainer or whatever, but there, we have, not only do we not have any evidence of, you know, a cookie cutter routine ever really hurting someone. Now, in this example, we looked at, you know, this was someone that probably shouldn't have been doing this routine because it was too advanced. But what that is really is just singling out one part of a routine that was supposed to be like, you know, a stage three, a stage four, whatever it is. So the former trainer had taken an advanced protocol and then thrown it down a newbie's throat. And that's probably a bad idea in general. But as far as using a cookie cutter routine, not only is there not a single piece of evidence that shows that that might harm someone at all. And you're talking about every study that's ever been done, because they're all cookie cutter routines, every book that's ever been written, every article that's ever been written, any cookie cutter routine. We don't have people limping out of gyms and having all kinds of injuries that we can identify as a cause of the routine. So in and of itself, cookie cutter routines, I think, are a reasonable way to exercise. And I'll be honest, like, I have two examples of that from myself. A lot of times I'll have people that might inquire about services, and if I'm, you know, over their price range or whatever, there have been times where I say, you know what, you don't, you know, you're not telling me you have anything individually to be concerned about. They're not, you know, I have pain in my hips or I this or that or whatever. So a person's basically just saying, hey, I just want to lose weight. And I'll point them right over to a, you know, New Rules of Lifting or something and say, look, don't waste your money on me. You know, it's not worth it. Go, you don't need a personalized routine. You just need a routine. The other, example that I would have is when we were writing, when Cass and I were working on that book together, which incidentally is on hold right now, but we're still going to finish it, but we're both doing some different stuff right now. But the workouts are basically finished for that book, and we have to go through the larger beta testing, which is everyone on my Facebook will get a crack at it. But when I was originally writing them, I let my clients have first dibs. And what I did is I asked them, would you like to be part of this like beta testing group? And if they agreed, and they all agreed, I didn't charge them because I was giving them the same workout. They all received the same workout, and that's not what our agreement was. And I've had clients for years. I've had one of them I just had my fifth anniversary with. But that's not what the agreement was. So they got like 6 months of free training from me because I wasn't going to charge them for something that I was giving someone else. So I think that's what leads to the second part of that kind of question. It's not so much about, you know, is it safe? So should, you know, newbies use, you know, workouts that someone else wrote? I think that if it's explained to the client and the client is okay with that, I don't have a problem with it either. But chances are, I think that a personal trainer is going to be hired because there's supposed to be some kind of individualization in the workout. I think a personal trainer probably has, there's probably three levels. There's the first level, it's basically just a rep counter. This is a worthless trainer, quite frankly. This is, you know, a general trainer that gets hired to sell product, not to make their clients better. And this is a worthless trainer. You should walk right out the door if you encounter someone like this. The second level is probably what I would assume most trainers kind of fall under. Either they're very good at writing workouts, they understand the basics of physiology, they understand the basics of exercise selection, but maybe they're not quite as good at seeing the problems in form or seeing the problems in technique, something like that, or vice versa, where they're excellent at picking out technique issues, but they may not be so great at writing programs. And then I think the third level would be the really excellent trainers that are able to do both very well, and they can write effective training routines, and they can also improve their clients' movement and function through their advice. That is the assumption of why a client hires a trainer: the personalization and the improvement in their form and their muscle and their technique. So when a client hires you, I think it behooves you to make that personalization. And that doesn't mean that you can't use an idea. It doesn't mean that you can't use a template. I have certainly used templates with different, you know, with different clients. I'll have two clients that present similarly, and I will give them something that is a similar methodology, but it's not going to be the same workout. I have never given two people the same workout. There's no way, because not only is it just, it's completely immoral in my opinion, but you really are lying to your clients if you're just handing out the same workouts. And that can mean anything. It can mean that the accessory lifts are different. It can mean that the reps and sets are different. It can mean the rest times are different. But, you know, let's be honest, at the same time, a squat is, you know, if I give someone a back squat and I give the next client a back squat, I didn't copy anything. It just happens that they both have back squats. So I think that you do have to, you know, decide for yourself what is appropriate for each client. And if two clients present similarly, you know, both in ability, presentation, you know, structure, strength, whatever, chances are those two routines will be similar as long as you're paying attention to what their needs are and how they're progressing and what have you. I think that they can be similar workouts and not feel like you're cheating them out of something. But to purposely say, I'm lazy today, everyone gets the same workout, I think that's where you're over that line.
Well, I think this is a fantastic question, and it's something that, yeah, you know, it's an interesting line that we run into, especially when it comes to, you know, there are some trainers out there that are just getting started. You know, they might even have just barely gotten their certification, but they realize this is something
that
they
is
really
what
want
the
to
certification
do.
Certification is for too.
Oh, exactly.
You know, what I mean? I think that that's maybe, and please continue, but I think that's kind of an interesting area that I think it shows the difference between a newbie who's trying to do something right, mm-hmm, and maybe a newbie who just doesn't really care. Because I know when I was and I was kind of trying to fill my feed and get everything, I was going by my certification. Mm-hmm. I was looking at their templates and the things that I learned from and trying, mm-hmm, to move from there, mm-hmm, instead of saying, oh, what's Tony Horton been doing, or what's this lately? Mm-hmm. Even if it is someone like Nick Tuminello and Men's Fitness or whatnot, like instead of doing that, I was trying to learn from the lesson plan in which that I had been taught. So I definitely think that's maybe for people that are new out there, a way that you can go while you're learning. But please continue.
I think that that you brought up an interesting point. It might even go into an even more interesting discussion when, you know, you talk about, you know, what kind of template are a lot of trainers starting out with, and, you know, what does that say about the certification that they've obtained and are they attained? And You know, that is very interesting, because going from like what, you know, I have my CSCS, and there definitely is a certain template that they give you. And, you know, it's not fantastic, but it's some place to start, and you can tell. And I think even we know there's so many trainers out there that aren't very well educated. They might not care as much as the next person. They might not be going to, you know, seminars. They might not be even reading blogs, let alone looking at research. But I think it is an interesting area where you see one set of trainers that might just be saying, all right, I picked up the new rules of lifting. I'm going to use these programs for my clients, and I'm going to at least see what works. I'm going to see, you know, what they like, what I feel is, you know, something that can be transitioned into the rest of my clients. Because I think a lot of people even just bought like the Men's Health book of, the Men's Health exercise book. What's it called?
Exercises.
Thank you. Yeah. Which mm-hmm. Peel attributed to for the women's version. And I think that is something that is great for people to at least pick up. So it gives them some ideas. It gives them something to think about. And as long as they try the exercises and note some kind of, results, see, you know, some kind of statistical evidence that shows that, you know, I found that this exercise worked great. It was easy to teach my client. They picked it up right away. You know, we had great results with it. They increased their strength, yada, yada, yada. And I think as long as they're doing that, I think it's okay for at least people to find new stuff and try it out. And then hopefully they're just educated enough or they're considerate enough to just pick and choose what works and then get rid of what doesn't.
Yeah.
God, I rambled.
And again, no, not at all. And I think, again, it goes down to the idea of, you know, we talk about exercise selection. I obviously think that it's a very important aspect of writing a routine. But the fact of the matter is, we don't really have good evidence to suggest that exercise selection is all terribly important. And that may just be a product of the type of research that we do, because we're more interested in physiology than necessarily the mechanics of it. Mm-hmm. The mechanics of it is the stuff like Saarman. But even that, you know, we find that to be very clinically relevant. And I think, you know, there's a good majority of physical therapists and you know, the higher level trainers, let's say, that are reading that kind of text and using it. But there is an argument against that kind of stuff, where there's none of it's actually really, you know, proven, so to speak. There's some inklings of evidence, but it's not like really, really good evidence. And that's just an aspect of what it is. It's very difficult to make studies that look at things like that, like the types of things that Saarman is doing. Now, if you look at her books, though, I mean, there's tons of research behind it, but it is a lot of it is theory. And because of that, I don't think that you can say for fact, you know, a back squat versus a front squat is going to make a difference, you know. But I think that we tend to talk in those with those ideas in mind, because we do feel that they make a difference for one, you know, client versus another. And I certainly have my opinions on that too. And I think that exercise selection is very important. But having said that, I can't say that not understanding exercise selection is going to be a negative necessarily, unless there's a pre-existing condition. Look, if you have shoulder pain, you're not doing an overhead press. I'm sorry. But, you know, there's no link to suggest that an overhead press for a healthy shoulder is necessarily going to cause a shoulder issue. But then again, this goes back to the idea of, you know, the evaluation process, how good a trainer or even a therapist is at understanding and seeing these things and being able to deal with them appropriately. So if you have poor thoracic mobility, if you have, you know, any kind of shoulder, pre-existing shoulder condition, whatever, overhead presses probably aren't a great idea. And if you can't measure glenohumeral rotation and range of motion, things like that, then maybe it's not a good idea to do this. But if you have someone that either needs that type of strength or doesn't seem to have any of these problems, I can't make an argument to say that overhead press really isn't a good idea, you know? And I think that that's what this question ultimately runs into, is the idea of how much does this really matter? And I can't say that I know it matters a lot. I just kind of feel like it does. But, you know, if it is certainly for a short period of time, if you're using a routine that's based more on what someone else wrote than what you might be able to evaluate because you don't have those evaluation skills yet, I don't think that you're going to harm your client. And I think that's where you have to begin that process and say, you know, am I harming someone or am I helping them? And every piece of evidence that we have, and, you know, both through the research, but as well as just, you know, experience, you're going to do a person a benefit by getting them to exercise. And the type of exercise that you choose is secondary to that in many, many ways. So, you know, the mode itself may be important, but what happens within that? If they're lifting weights, that's great. If it's all machine-based, half the research is done on all machines.
Yeah.
And people have never spontaneously combusted because of that. You know what I mean? So we may have opinions on the quality of machine work and what we prefer to do, but the fact of the matter is it's not going to harm anybody. And I defy anyone to show me some real evidence that shows that it will. But we also feel like in a long-term kind of thing, it's probably a lot – not only is it maybe better for the individual to learn how to move themselves rather than just to move a piece of equipment, but it's also a little bit more of that's where trainer comes in, because sitting you down on a machine really doesn't mean that I'm doing much of anything. I'm counting your reps more or less, you know, but again, that's the separation between a newbie that either just got certified or even went through the education. And let's, you know, face it, undergrad exercise science education is not typically about the things that we talk about here. And honestly, Krista, you know, she and I have had conversations before. She's a PhD, and she said the stuff that she's learned throughout her entire education is not what we talk about even here on the FitCast. You know, this is an entirely different kind of realm of, you know, applying sciences and applying experiences. So new trainers a lot of times are really behind the ball in terms of what we think is progressive training. And if that's the case, I don't blame them for not quite knowing a great way to evaluate or a great way to, you know, to program, because they're just not taught that stuff. They're taught about VO2 max and lactate threshold and stuff that honestly doesn't come up in the day-to-day activities of the overwhelming majority of trainers.
I will say, just to add that a short point, because I know I don't want to run through every time, but I will say that I 100% agree with John. And I think when, if you find yourself listening to this and you find yourself being a new trainer, I know when I was a new trainer, one of the things that I kind of watched and did initially, I did do a lot of the similar templates. I did do a lot of similar programs and gave people a lot of similar exercises. And one of the reasons that I did that was I kind of wanted to see what worked well for people and what did not work well for people. And as a trainer, certain things that I have come across with certain populations that I work with, I do have a tendency to think that exercise selection is extremely important when you're working with people. And while, no, I can't show you a study, and this is where that research versus in the trenches field thing comes up, but you know, I can say that do I think that just because an obese person, female woman, is going to get down on her hands and knees and try and do a push-up is going to hurt her on, you know, 100%? Yes. No, I can't say that. But I can say that it's probably not the best idea to give your obese boot camp clients in, you know, 8 to 10 people that are lined up in a row to tell them to do push-ups. I can probably say that that's not an exercise selection I would choose. And I can probably say that lunges is another one that I would not choose. Because in my course of working with people and in my history of what I have seen, there are certain exercises that do not translate well, be it cue explanation, which can be extremely important as a trainer, to just the actual physiology of whoever's trying to perform it and their overweight or their lack of conditioning, whatnot, that there are certain exercises that do put people in more of a prone positioning of injury or of not being able to complete it properly or of simply cheating based upon of embarrassment of not being able to complete it. There's so many psychological factors. My point is that is that I think as for people that are listening, because John nailed the reasoning of what behind it, but for those that are listening that are kind of saying, well, I don't know, I do use templates or I do use that. What I say is, you know, find the things that you can communicate best. Find the things that you see where people respond to the easiest. I have kind of a list, if you will, of exercises and movements that I, from my experience, have found that almost everybody can do with relatively ease, or that cause the least amount of issues. You know, like a lot of people can't necessarily do squats right off the bat very easily or lunges very easily, but they can do step-ups very easily. You know, they have very little problems with doing step-ups or with doing you know, a box squat versus, you know, just a free back squat with a heavy back load. Just certain things that can take pace. Certain exercises you find that over time, when you communicate it with people, maybe it's just you, maybe for you it's a different exercise, but they have a good time or an easy time implementing that exercise. Certain things like that. And you build your own template of exercises and communications and you can utilize the strengths of learning what other people have given and information, things like the show, seminars, research, or whatnot. And you can implement those things and try and bridge the two. And I'm 100% believer of personalization and going that extra mile versus just rep counting and whatnot. And so that's just to throw in a little extra thing that was popping into my mind while John was talking. But there's definitely, because I do think exercise selection is important. And I think as a trainer, one of your things that you can do is just simply say, what is it I communicate to people that they seem to have an easier time going through and dealing with, not just because everyone should do squats, everyone should do this, everyone should do that. You know, what is the best things that you can communicate and then work on it from there. So extra thing.
I think that's a great way, great spot to end it. Again, I would love to remind people that we have a lot of great shows coming up for you during the week. So make sure you keep heading back to thefitcast.com, and we are working on some new features for you guys at the website, and hopefully we'll have a lot of great stuff to show you in the upcoming weeks. So the Fitcast Pulse is going to be on Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can join us live on justin.tv. If you have any suggestions for stories that you'd like us to cover, you can email them to pulse@thefitcast.com. If you have mailbag questions that you would like us to answer, you can send them to questions@thefitcast.com. Same thing with roundtable topics. If you have anything that was like Chris's question that kind of allows us to go around the horn, for lack of a better term, we can do that as well. So please make sure, check out those other podcasts, check out the blog report. Let me know what you think. Give me your feedback on what you would like to see from that. One thing that people asked for was a list of all the blogs that I go to. Even better, you might want to just check out Ben Bruno's blog. He pretty much posts everything that everyone writes ever during the week. So that might be your best source. And finally, please don't forget, if you enjoy the podcast, we would really appreciate it if you head over to iTunes, give us a good review. That all really helps. And I know we mentioned it a lot, but if you guys haven't put up a review in a while, or if you haven't before, it would be a huge help, and we would really appreciate it more than you could ever imagine if you would head to iTunes, throw up a review, even, you know, send an email to a couple of your friends, tell them about the podcast, and, you know, maybe we can help them out as well if they want to send in a mailbag question, help them reach their fitness goal. So again, a lot of great stuff coming down the line. Lots of interviews coming up this week that we're going to have for you. Make sure to keep checking out thefitcast.com. We will also put up a Google Calendar with all the whole schedule for all the Fitcast stuff. We are taking it to the next level, stepping it up, and as they say, we're going to be all the way live. That's the song, right? Lee, help me. All right. Thanks. I'm sorry. See you next week. Stick around for the off topic. We've got about 20 minutes talking about the West Wing, the best headphones, and John breathes into his mic. See you next time.
How dare you? I did not.
Hello, welcome to the off-topic discussion for whatever the hell episode this is. I'm Kevin Larrabee. John and Lee are here as well. We are not broadcasting live, so we are going to be a little bit more uncensored than normal, and we will see what we're going to talk about. We're not going to talk about Fast Five because Lee hasn't seen it, so we will wait until next week and then ruin it for John because I don't care about right. John as much as I do about Lee. So now that we got that out there, I will say I've been going through some old episodes of The X-Files on Netflix streaming and just pretty much picking and choosing, like going through like 5 or 6 episodes a season, like the best ones. And man, that was such a good show.
I never watched The X-Files.
Oh, man. It was pretty good in terms of the... It used to scare the crap out of me as a kid. Like, you know, you'd have this one guy who was... had, like, no arms and legs, and he was, like, somehow murdering people. And there was this other woman, and, like, these were, like, hillbillies. Like, they were... I mean, you can't trust these people who, like, live on a farm. There's nothing around them. So, like, if you get killed on their farm, no one's going to hear it. Like, no one's going to find out unless someone knows where you are. So... that's really messed up. And I really hate people when I'm driving who point their, like they're leaning forward, like their neck and their head are going forward, like they can't see the road. And it drives me nuts. And I always want to be like, just get the hell off the road. You suck. Sorry, that was one thing that was bugging me earlier today.
I guess so.
You ever see those people though? And it's like, There's some people that just can't drive and you just want to be like, get off the road.
Now imagine every single one of those people on the road at the same time, and you know what it's like to drive in my new country.
Do they have some kind of driver's license thing there at least, or is it just
They have some kind of driver's license thing, but you would swear that they don't. It's like, I feel like being in this lane. Actually, maybe I'll go over there. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So I'll just drive in the middle of both lanes. Actually, you know what? Maybe I'll just swerve back and forth between the two lanes randomly and not care when this guy's honking me and flashing his brights at me. They just don't care. They just don't care. It's incredible. And they'll just slowly weave into your lane. You might be right next to them. You might be right behind them in that lane. It doesn't matter. They don't care. They're just wee. I often think of that episode of Family Guy. Did you see that when it was the Asian woman driving?
No.
In Family Guy? There was an episode.
I didn't do that. John's internet connection just died.
John, did it really?
Oh, there you go. Okay, you're back.
Yeah. So it's this Asian woman driving, and it's making fun of the stereotype of Asian woman drivers. And I don't want any hate mail people. This is Family Guy. And she's driving, and she goes, "Good luck, everybody!" And then she just turns her wheel real quick, and the entire highway explodes behind her.
Dude, that's an like old driving one. In. That's from like
yeah, it is. Wow, it is. And every single time I get in my car and drive to work, I'm like, I'm living that episode. That's right. Except instead of Asian drivers, it's something else. But that's what it is. It's incredible. I don't think I curse now in 3 languages, in my adopted language, in English, and then in Spanish. And I do it all like in a row. Mm-hmm. It's incredible.
Just to give you a heads up, we should have drafts of our new logo on Monday.
Oh, sweet.
So
have you seen any previews of it yet?
No. I forgot to forward your headshots to him. So I just did that like yesterday. So we should be all set by tomorrow. Gotcha. And then I'm going to have a telephone call. It's very professional.
It sounds very professional.
And I will give him a plug when we get the logo and it's all looking all fancy and such.
Cool.
I don't know about the website, though. I don't know what's up with that.
Well, I just want to see what I look like in a cartoon.
Yeah, I do, too.
I hope it looks like the Ghostbusters cartoon.
I would demand.
So the old Ghostbusters, huh? The real Ghostbusters. Right. Because there was another cartoon called The Ghostbusters, so they had to call the Ghostbusters cartoon The Real Ghostbusters. How stupid is that?
You know, one day there'll be a TV show for you, Kevin, in which that you can go on and win money for your useless knowledge.
Mm.
I had a client talking to me about that the other day. She was like, oh, I just watched this Rich, not Richard Gere, this... who's the guy from Kevin Costner? So she's like, oh, yeah, I was watching this Kevin Costner movie this morning while I was, you know, making breakfast or whatever. And she's like, oh, I can't remember the name. It, you know, it came out a couple years back, and it had, you know, some weird things to do with these, you know, kind of like psychic stuff. And I'm like, oh, Dragonfly. And she's like, oh, how'd you know that? I'm like, I don't know. I haven't seen it. I have this knowledge database of stupid crap that will never, ever be useful. But I know, like, all that stuff. Like, and by the way, Bill and Ted 3 is official. It is starting to film in 3 weeks. That's huge.
Wow.
I can finally breathe again.
Do you want to hear, wow. The premise?
Sure.
Have you guys seen Bogus Journey?
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course.
Okay. So, you know, at the end of Bogus Journey, where it comes out that Bill and Ted more or less created this song that brought the whole world together. You know, the planets came into alignment. So,
right.
This basically takes place in present day. So it's going to take place in whatever, 2010, 2012. And they still have not written this song yet. And it's like, the movie is about their journey that makes them create this song that brings the world together. So it should be, I'm very excited. It will involve time travel. I don't know how you replace George Carlin. If they put like some,
I forgot about that.
I know it sucks. Yeah. It's really bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as long as they don't put like some asshole, like Jack Black or, some other D-bag that is like, you know, pop, you know, is popular to like the general, you know, population, that then I'll be cool. Like if they could get someone like, you know, who would be really awesome to play like the future utopia person would be like Jamie Foxx.
I was thinking older, you know, I was thinking like a more chilled out Jeff Bridges or something.
Oh, God. I don't think they could pull off Jeff Bridges, but I know Bo Bridges ain't doing shit.
Pretty funny.
Can't get Jeff. Let's not get even, Bo.
Not even Zach Galifianakis?
No. I think because the problem is that Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter need to really be the stars of the movie. It can't be someone that is like that big right now. And the problem with Zach is he plays kind of the same character in a lot of his movies right now. Like just like he
plays exactly the same character.
But Rufus wasn't a dumbass.
No, he wasn't.
Rufus was he was the mentor.
Ooh,
he was the one. That
Robin
was,
Williams. Robin Williams.
Maybe. Yeah, he's old and he's hairy, so he could do it.
Exactly.
That's the only.
Those are the two qualifications.
That's the prerequisite needed in order to play.
Yep.
Old and hairy. Okay.
Either that or get like Hugo Weaving.
I don't see it.
No, exactly. But that would just be a curveball. But if you want to follow Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves on Twitter, because they are talking about it. Like it's really happening. Like the script is done. They begin filming in 3 weeks. I can't wait. And there is, thanks to the $100 million that Fast 5 made in its first weekend, Fast 6 is coming. It's in the pipeline.
There's nowhere they're not going to do it with how much money Fast 5 made.
But you won't believe what Fast 6 is going to be all about. I can't.
Do you know?
Well, that's why you have to stay for the end of the movie.
You will know? Okay.
Because you know how they do that at movies. Like, you stay after the credits, and they do the same thing with Tron Legacy. Like, they have that whole... Oh, and I bought a Flynn Lives t-shirt.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I'm going to go out, you know, and pick up some ladies tonight with my Flynn Lives t-shirt.
I mean, that's a panty dropper right there.
Well, there is a... I can go to Fun Spot. Literally and figuratively at the up in New Hampshire. So,
wow, you said literally and figuratively.
I had a spike about an hour ago.
I caught that.
Apparently so. So Lee, what's up, baby? I told Kevin this, but now I'm going to tell you. After work, I stopped by Mohammed's house, and he's Lebanese, and we had a quick bite to eat. Now this is what he brought out for me. All from Lebanon from his last trip home. Goat cheese in olive oil. Fresh olive oil. Like, there's no label on it. It's just a bottle with olive oil in it.
Like grandma gardened in the country.
Exactly. It's like literally shake the tree in the backyard of olives. They fall down, and then you crush them.
Yeah, already.
And then olives. Two kinds of olives. Like the regular plain olives and then like a spicy olive. and then sesame seeds, like sprinkled in, and you mash up the cheese and you smush it all together, and then you eat it with, you know, like flatbread.
Oh God, that's
ridiculous. I don't even care. Like, we can have all the arguments in the world about, like, buy organic, buy natural. It is just buy it because it's freaking unreal. It was freaking unreal. It was absolutely ridiculous. And I've been to Lebanon, and the food is, like, absurd. And this was just, like, I was like, oh, my God, when are we going back to Lebanon?
Oh, that sounds amazing.
It was amazing.
That's the thing in general. You know, that's what I always tell people, a lot of people that have arguments. Just if you buy quality ingredients, usually, surprisingly, it'll go hand in hand with good production ethics, etc.
Oh, my. Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Like, it really does go hand in hand. So you buy quality, good tasting ingredients, and surprise, it usually ends up that it's actually quality product. Shocking. But, oh, that sounds amazing. Yeah, I'm jealous.
It was amazing.
I had really good salsa this weekend. That's about all I got there.
Oh.
It's really good salsa, but I can't come back.
That's cool.
With, like, you know, fresh bottled olive oil and goat cheese breast. And
yeah.
I can't do it.
It's like, hand me a bottle and I'll
back with that. So.
Yeah, it was freaking unbelievable. It was amazing.
Lee, can I ask you something?
Yes.
Joe, what do you use for headphones? I know you're a huge music person. Do you have like a good set of studio headphones, or what do you use?
I just killed off one of my pairs of headphones. Actually, right now I'm using a kind of mid quality ghetto Sony pair of headphones. I was looking into getting a new set. I like the Bose. I've always been a friend of Bose in general. I like the way Bose sounds. I like their headphones.
So you're either one. That's a very binary brand. Like, people either love Bose or they hate Bose.
Yeah, it's pretty polar like that.
Polar.
I think Bose is good. They're just overpriced.
I have a
pair of Bose headsets and I love them, but they're overpriced and I know it.
Aside from that, I don't know. Like, what are you looking for in your headphones? Because everyone's different. See, I need ultra clarity for the stuff that I usually do because I'm trying to really pick apart sound.
Well, how is your? I mean, but the thing that I'm really into Sennheiser right now, and that's what I've usually
gone
with.
Those are great headphones. Well, a lot of people like those, and a lot of people like Shure. If you like Sennheiser, you usually like Shure.
But the problem with the ones that I have, the high end, the 555s, is that they leak a lot because they're open. And I want to get some closed headphones as well, because if I'm listening to music, and even if I have them on my head, like, you can hear almost, you know, note for note what I'm listening to, which isn't a big deal in my apartment. But if I go somewhere else, let me break this down a little bit, because I actually did get a couple questions about this on Facebook. But I also picked up a pair of Klipsch S4 earphones, which are ridiculous. Like, they are phenomenal. And that's what I'm going to pretty much use for on the go. But it kind of annoys me that the open-end headphones leak so much where I can't use them for podcasting. Because if I was using them right now, you guys would hear the feedback that I get into my headphones when we do the live shows. So I couldn't use that. So I'm also looking at the Sennheiser, and I just sent them to John, the HD448s, which are closed, and they, they don't have as good sound staging, which I guess gives it that surround feel. But, you know, for $100, they are still pretty good headphones. So
the ones I just sent you a link of, they're a little bit pricier, but they're amazing close back headphones.
Oh, I've seen these.
They're amazing close back headphones.
They're comfortable.
Very comfortable. That's one of the reasons I like them. I probably would buy these, but they're a little bass heavy.
Yep.
So clarity can be like a little bit harder for me. So I need to be able to get really teeny tiny when I need to get teeny tiny. But for general, like, listening to music or doing podcasts or anything that's not, I'm trying to pick apart a sound from another sound amongst 20 sounds on a recording, they're perfect in my opinion.
Well, the thing that I've been using for a kind of a baseline is I'm very addicted to the Tron Legacy soundtrack. Like, that's something I can, or not necessarily just that, but stuff that doesn't have words in it that I can do work to. Like, I've been listening to like a lot of video game soundtracks that have almost like a little bit of a techno sound to it. Tony, that's for you. And I want to find, like, the 555 sound great. for the Tron soundtrack. But then I tried out the Sony, like the old Sonys that have been the mainstay. They're like the MDR, what are they? The MDR 7506s, which have been around for like 20 years, but they just sounded so flat. Even I even let them break in for like 40 hours. Like I just let my iPod play them, play on it for 40 hours, and they still didn't sound that great. So I'm trying to find something that just really has like a good punch, but it's always like battling between what can be portable, because the Sonys can be folded up, put in a bag, and they're very portable. With the Sennheisers, they, you know, they definitely sound better, but they're not as easy to bring somewhere else.
Yeah, good quality headphones, unless you're going with those high-tech earbuds, are never easy to carry and travel with. I've yet to see a pair.
Well, maybe I'll give those...
They're good, or something in that kind of a field, obviously, but I like these. They're good, and sometimes they can have, like, stayability issues. I think that's the number one point. They sound really good. I would get them used, or not used at a, like, discount price, because you can get them much cheaper than where I pointed you to. That's my point. But yeah, I think that they're good.
Oh, cool. Well, maybe I'll give them a shot.
And I bet that you'd like the Working for a Nuclear-Free City band. Check them out. If you're looking for something else to add to
you. Yeah, can you repeat that one more time?
Working for a Nuclear-Free City. It's good, like, I'm trying to ignore the music, but also live in the music ambience.
Cool. No, we've talked about this in the past, like listening to the Hacker soundtrack. Like, that's another one that I always listen to when I'm, you know, doing work on the computer.
Yeah. I bet you'll like that.
God, you're awesome for music suggestions. John's looking for some new headphones too. So,
yep.
And these are not really good for gym. I use really crappy headphones for the gym. That was part of the questions. Like, what do I use in the gym? I use like a $10 Sony pair of earphones that wrap around my ear because they never fall out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they sound pretty good, and I can listen to DMX without, you know, having any static or anything like that.
I have a pair of Bose headphones that never fall out. I've front squatted with the bar resting over those things, but they haven't pulled out of my ear.
What if you lose like $100 pair of headphones? I'd feel like an ass.
Yeah, I did. I sliced the cord in half once.
Yeah, I remember that.
Which pissed me off, and then I just bought another pair because...
You made of money. That's okay.
Right, pretty much.
Oh, Lee, where am I?
I was pissed, though.
Is there a newer version of those headphones? Though. Because it looks like they're out of stock on Mr. Amazon. If I can't get it on Amazon, I can't buy them.
Gotcha.
Oh, no. It looks like there are a new version.
There's a few versions. Oh, yeah. Right. I mean, just in general, that company, their closed back headphones are good.
Point me to what you think is good on that page, and I will bite the bullet. Because, I mean, you should only have to buy one pair of headphones, and then you're good to go. All right. Did you guys watch Fringe last week? Because...
We don't watch Fringe.
Damn it. Did you,
Kevin?
Did you watch?
We don't
did
watch,
you watch
it.
Doctor Who?
No, I don't watch.
Oh,
Doctor
man,
Who,
Doctor Who
Kevin.
Is so.
We don't watch these shows. Hey, did you watch The West Wing? Because
I actually procured all 7 seasons. Or no, there's 8 seasons of The West Wing thanks to my brother.
7 seasons. Mm. Did you really?
Yeah. He has all the seasons. I'm like, dude, can I borrow them? I'm like, oh, they're not on Blu-ray, but that's okay.
Yeah, I bought the fancy box set that looks like commemorative coin collection.
Oh, yeah, it's like a big rectangle. No, yeah. I totally, yeah, that's what he is. And it's supposedly pretty cheap on Amazon. Like, it's only $100 or something. I'm just, I gotta go.
I got it off of eBay for incredibly cheap.
Oh, yeah, it's like $100.
I mean, it was new because it was expensive on Amazon. On Amazon, it was expensive. I got the full box set off of eBay for like $89.
Who's your favorite character?
CJ.
Who's CJ?
CJ and Joshua are my two favorite characters. CJ is Allison Janney in real life. Joshua is Bradley.
Oh, dude, Bradley's awesome. Yeah, he's so good on Studio 60.
They're both my two favorite characters by far.
And I'm sorry, you did check out Studio 60, right?
Oh, yeah, I got it. I'm just obsessed right now. And until I finish with The West Wing, I'm not watching anything else. Okay. I literally think it's my new favorite TV show of all time.
Cool.
And I don't know why. But I absolutely
haven't watched Stargate. Not yet.
It's on the list.
It's streaming on Netflix, all 10 seasons.
Then it's really on the list because that's convenient and easy.
John, do you guys have Netflix over there? Can you get that, like the streaming?
No, I can't. It doesn't come out of country. There's a lot of stuff that I can't get because it's not out of country. Very sad.
God, I can't wait. I can't wait to check out those headphones now. I'm very excited.
Okay, so I picked one, and I'm sending it to you. This is for what you need, price range, whatnot.
This will get it done?
That's what I would go for. And they have the best quality reviews where I just looked up through Harmony Central.
They look like the headphones that you would wear to get your hearing test when you're in school.
A little bit.
Put your hand up if, on whatever side you hear it on.
Ding.
Yeah, I know.
I faked that test. I faked that test when I was a kid, and I got caught doing it.
That's the worst thing, like, to ever cheat at.
I was like, because I'm partially deaf in one of my ears, and I was really embarrassed about it. And so I could see that they were pressing the button and like the glass like in front of me. And so I started raising up my hand, and they caught on, I guess, at some point. And they were like, "Are you faking it?" And I was like, "No." Are you faking it? I'm like, "Yeah."
I just closed the chat. All right. Well, that's where we're going to end it here. We're going to get started with the show. Thanks for listening, and buy some headphones.